VOA News. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting. U.S. Ambassador to Russia John Huntsman on Wednesday visited the retired U.S. Marine who's been detained on espionage charges in Russia. He also spoke on the phone with the family of 48-year-old Paul Whelan, according to a State Department statement. The statement said Ambassador Huntsman expressed his support for Mr. Whelan and offered the embassy's assistance. On Monday, the Russian Federal Security Service said the American, who's been detained on December 28th, was carrying out an act of espionage. They provided no further details. President Trump is making his first extended comments about Jim Mattis's departure from the Pentagon. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
Mattis announced his resignation nearly 2 weeks ago after the president said he would pull U.S. troops out of Syria. The president sees it differently.
President Obama fired him. And essentially so did I.
Mattis had said he would stay on until the end of February, but the president pushed him out 3 days later. Today, he told reporters he wasn't happy with Mattis's work, especially in Afghanistan.
What's he done for me?
On his first full day as acting U.S. Defense Secretary Wednesday, Pat Shanahan said that China would be the military's top priority. He told Defense Department staff members at a meeting to remember China, China, China. One defense official said Shanahan indicated he would adhere to the military strategy developed by his predecessor, Jim Mattis, who considered China and Russia as great power competitors. The United States has accused China of military and economic espionage and has denounced China's trade and infrastructure plan as a form of economic coercion. This is VOA News. U.S. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy says President Trump invited congressional leaders back to the White House Friday for more talks on how to end the government shutdown. The president is demanding $5 billion for a wall along the U.S. southern border. Democrats have refused to give him that amount. Wednesday's meeting between Trump and top Democrats and Republicans ended with no progress besides the president's willingness to continue talks. President Trump said Wednesday he'd received a letter from the North Korean dictator and will likely meet with him in the near future.
I just got a great letter from Kim Jong-un, and those few people that I've shown this letter to, they've never written letters like that. This letter is a great letter. We've made a lot of progress with North Korea and Kim Jong-un. Chairman Kim has been, we really established a very good relationship. A lot of good things are happening. I never said speed. Look, it's been this way for 80-plus years. We had our meeting 6 months ago in Singapore. We'll probably now have another meeting. He'd like to meet. I like to meet.
American Catholic bishops are beginning a prayer retreat on sexual abuse. Associated Press correspondent Walter Ratliff reports.
U.S.-based Roman Catholic bishops are gathering at a seminary near Chicago for a week-long retreat on the church sexual abuse scandal. Organizers say it will focus on prayer and spiritual reflection and not formulating policy. It also serves as a prelude to the summit of the world's bishops at the Vatican next month to forge a comprehensive response to the crisis that has riven the church. The meetings follow two blistering reports this year from state attorneys general in Illinois and Pennsylvania alleging negligence by state church leaders.
A record number of migrants from Africa arrived in Spain via the Mediterranean Sea in 2018. According to the International Organization for Migration, Spain took in over 57,000 people from the start of the year until December 26. That's an average of about 160 per day. Tech giant Apple revealed Wednesday that holiday sales were even lower than the company had forecast, citing a sales slowdown in China as a significant factor. In a letter to shareholders, Chief Executive Tim Cook blamed the fall on the trade battle that President Trump is waging against China. He wrote, "While we anticipated some challenges in key emerging markets, we did not foresee the magnitude of the economic deceleration, partly in Greater China." China has become Apple's third largest market in recent years, mostly because of iPhone sales. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Christopher Cruz, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Election monitors from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, say Sunday's DRC election went relatively well.
We appreciate this announcement as close to the reality on the ground, because no serious incident was in the country except four people died on Kivu.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. Uganda has intensified Ebola testing on its borders with the DRC. Sudan's ruling party rejects demands for President al-Bashir to step down. And about three dozen people are missing and feared dead after a boat capsized off the coast of Guinea's capital, Conakry.
Because the number of people was too much, the boat just turned up in the water, in the sea, and all the people fell down. And only nine persons were found.
Amara Samparis, a Guinea's Minister of Information, a Somali female student trains to become an electrician. And the Museum of Black Civilization that's open in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of the ruling coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo is welcoming the announcement by election monitors from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, that Sunday's DRC presidential election went relatively well. This despite claims by opposition parties that the vote was marred by widespread irregularities. In a statement issued Wednesday, SADC said despite the range of challenges posed by the elections, the vote allowed the majority of the Congolese people to exercise their right to vote. Andre Alain Atundu, spokesman for President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition, says the SADC announcement confirms what the government already knew about the conduct of the election.
We appreciate this announcement as close to the reality on the ground, because no serious incident was in the country except four people died on Kivu, among them one policeman, one electoral agent, and two citizens. So we can honestly say that the election was well managed, and it was a peaceful day for a normal election.
Let's assume that when the final results are announced, say your candidate, Mr. Shadary, does not win, does this mean you will support the results?
I think the question is not if Mr. Shadary will win or lose, or we will accept or not. The question is why the opposition candidates declare that they will not accept if Mr. Shadary is declared a winner. Why? Because we have to follow the truth of the election. If Mr. Shadary wins, it means he's a winner. If another person wins, it means he's a winner and became the head of a state. So if you are not happy with this decision, you should go to the Constitutional Court and ask them to change or to examine your request. So I don't understand why they think that Mr. Shadary should lose.
What can you tell our listeners about why the Kabila government has shut down internet connection or SMS services?
First of all, this is not the first government to take such measure. Secondly, no internet introduced a new criminality, intoxication or pulling the wrong things on the mind of the people. So to maintain this calm, peace mind, to maintain the serenity of the election, no one except SENI can publish results before SENI. So I think the government is right, because personally, I read at 9 o'clock p.m., 2 or 3 hours after closing the voting station, I read that Mr. Fayulu has obtained already 90%. Is it possible? Is it credible? So, to avoid this manipulation of the opinion, not for the result, but for not accepting any result, giving Mr. Shadary It means one of the candidates as winner, the government, I think, is right to keep calm by taking such a measure.
Let me ask you about another thing that's happening in relation to the election. Radio France International said on Wednesday that the DRC government revoked the accreditation of one of its journalists and cut off Radio France International broadcasts. Why?
I told you that no one can relay the opinion of private people about the results. We are waiting for results. Why should they announce results which is not from CENI?
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Uganda's government has intensified Ebola testing on its borders with the Democratic Republic of Congo following the influx of Congolese who are fleeing election violence. Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization, says he fears the refugees could easily spread the deadly virus in Uganda. He says both Uganda and the WHO should work together to ensure Ebola does not spread into the region. Mugumi Davis Rakabrinch files this report from Kampala.
Besides those fleeing the election violence, over 10,000 Congolese cross the DR Congo border into Uganda weekly to do business. Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus says he traveled with a team of Ebola experts to DR Congo to learn firsthand about the Ebola situation there.
We just returned from DRC after spending the New Year with our colleagues fighting Ebola there. We visited DRC this time, one reason being to show respect to those who are in the field fighting Ebola. And the second purpose was to evaluate the situation and recalibrate our strategies and tactics.
Ebola hemorrhagic fever, or simply Ebola, is a viral disease of humans and other primates caused by Ebola viruses. There is no cure or specific treatment that is currently approved, but treatment is primarily supportive in nature. Ghebreyesus says he worries that many people fleeing election violence from DR Congo may spread the disease unless health officials step up the fight.
Since the outbreak could affect the region, also for the time being, it's actually so far it's controlled in North Kivu area and Ituri provinces only, and it hasn't spread. And the number of cases is also kept low, but the chances of the spread are already there, still there. So that's why we came here to discuss about the situation.
More than 420 Ebola cases have been reported in eastern DR Congo since August last year, and about 60% of those infected have died from the disease. Ruhakana Rugunda, Uganda's Prime Minister, welcomed WHO intervention.
The key point is that it is a problem we must collaborate and defeat. And in this collaboration, World Health Organization provides the leadership. And we therefore commend WHO and its Director General for the leadership. We commend the Ugandan team, which has used its old experience in handling epidemics to collaborate with WHO.
Over the years, Uganda health workers have intervened in the fight against the Ebola threat, at times dying in the line of duty. Uganda, which has a history of containing Ebola outbreaks, sent a dozen of its experts to Sierra Leone and Liberia to help curb the spread of the disease. This time, WHO and the Minister of Health are not taking chances. Health workers in the districts bordering the DR Congo will be vaccinated. WHO has said the vaccine is safe and protects against the Ebola virus.
The strong preparedness has kept Ebola away, and we commended for doing that. But at the same time, that has to continue to be strengthened in order to keep not only Ebola away, but to control the region from the outbreak.
Ebola virus was discovered in 1970s in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Since then, the virus has emerged periodically and infected people in several African countries, including the West African countries of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, where the disease claimed more than 11,000 lives. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 3rd. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. About 36 people are missing and feared dead after a boat carrying New Year's revelers capsized off the coast of Guinea's capital, Conakry. Amara Sampare, Guinea's Minister of Information, says at least 40 people were on board the boat, which was meant for fishing trips and not for transporting multiple passengers, some of whom were said to be drunk. He says two of the 9 people found alive and rescued have since died.
The information gathered by the government so far let us know that a kind of pirogue used for artisanal fishing has been used to go to the Room Beach, is one of the islands near Conakry, to pick up 40 people. And in the way back to Conakry, because the number of people was too much for that artisanal fishing embarkation, the boat just turned up in the water, in the sea, and all the people fell down. And the Coast Guard sent a boat to save the people, and only 9 persons were found. Unfortunately, 2 of them are now died, 1 woman and 1 man.
We understand that as many as 40 people were on board that boat. So are you saying you found 9 people?
Yeah, so far 9 people was found in the sea and brought back to Conakry.
If you just found 9 people, is it safe to say that the other people must have been killed?
I cannot say that at the moment because the research are still ongoing. And we hope that we're going to be able to save maybe more. But so far, only 9 persons were found and brought back to Conakry.
If I understood you correctly, the boat that went to this island was not supposed to be carrying that number of people, or it was not supposed to be carrying people. It was used for fishing. So what type of regulation does the government have?
The regulation on this sector exists, but unfortunately, I'm not the right person to give you more details on it. I should get in touch with the minister in charge of fishing and the department in charge of maritime transport to give you some more details on the subject.
Do you know if these people were Guineans or they were tourists or what? What are the nationalities of these people?
I don't have those details because I need to get in touch with the hospital and the rescue team, but I cannot tell you exactly which nationalities were involved.
Minister, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year too. Thank you very much for calling.
Amara Sampare, Guinea's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Sudan's ruling National Congress Party has rejected calls by a number of political forces for President Omar al-Bashir to step down. This after the Sudanese Professional Association and the opposition groups launched the Declaration of Freedom and Change, which calls for the removal of President Bashir and his regime. Meanwhile, several Sudanese opposition political parties say they are preparing to organize more street protests despite heavy security in Khartoum and other cities across the country. The protests began over high prices for basic necessities like bread and fuel. Jibril Ibrahim, chairman of the Justice and Equality Movement, said some senior military people who are not happy with President Bashir might soon speak publicly.
Definitely the opposition, including Justice and Equality Movement, Sudan, all are behind the uprising there. It is quite natural that if you corner the people, they have to talk loudly about what they are facing. Now, as a result of rash policies, whether they're economic or political policies, and exclusion of most of the Sudanese political forces, the end result we are seeing now in Sudan is that while people are not getting their necessities, they have problems with food, bread, they have problems with cooking gas, they have problems with gasoline. They have problem even with getting their own money from the banks. They are not allowed to withdraw their own money, except in very small amounts.
Given the track record of the government of Sudan in using force while cracking down on activists, what is your focus on these street protests?
the opposition is coming together, providing leadership, providing a clear vision of what's next, about the transitional period, who will lead the transitional period, all the details that people need, so that when they say what's the alternative, they'll find it ready in front of them. I do believe people crossed the line of being afraid of the government brutality. Now they are ready to die. In all cases, they are dying. Instead of dying of hunger, you better die with a bullet. That's now the choice they have.
Former President Jafar Mohamed Nimeiry was toppled by street protesters. How strong is the ongoing protest in Sudan?
I think unless the military takes part in this and join the lines of the opposition, it's very difficult to bring about unseating the government. The easiest way of doing it is to have the military or the Sudan armed forces take side to the opposition. And then the Bashir will not have choice but to step down.
Experts in the Middle East say it's not easy to force President Bashir out of office because he has the backing of the military. What is your comment on this assessment?
Whatever you do with the military and you try to idealize it to the maximum, still there is room for them to maneuver. And I do believe with the information we are getting from inside is that ranks from the Brigadier General and down are not happy with Bashir. And they look at him as a liability. In that sense, I think when we reach a point where they see that their countrymen are getting killed on the streets in masses, they may not stand idle watching. So I think we'll reach a point where the military will make the right choice.
That was Jibril Ibrahim, chairman of the Justice and Equality Movement. He spoke from Paris with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. After decades of civil war and the absence of a functioning government in Somalia, many of the country's youth have been left without skills to make a living, especially women who face cultural barriers. Recently, with funding from the Norwegian government, the Hali Barisi Technical Development Center reopened in Mogadishu to teach young people new job skills. That is where Zaudu Hussein is trying to become an electrician, hoping to pave the way for other women in the usually male-dominated field. Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu.
18-year-old Zaudu Hussein works on a solar energy control panel at the Haile Barisi Technical School in Mogadishu. Her dream is to work as an electrician for a big power firm that will light up Somalia. That vision is far removed from the dark days of her past when conflict in Mogadishu forced her family to live on the violent streets of Somalia's capital. She says this training has changed her life and her view of what is possible.
Hadii aan xarunta ku soo biir lahayn, waxaan ahaan lahaa qof gurjoog ah, guri ka shaqeysa.
I would still be at home doing domestic work or probably married if I hadn't joined this center. But now I'm learning important skills such as electrical installation, and this is my life.
Ahna korontada.
The courses at the center train students with diverse interests and skills needed to enter today's job market. Hussein already uses her skills outside of school, helping neighbors with electrical problems and earning a little extra money. She's one of just a few women training to become an electrician, but school officials predict that will soon change.
Traditionally in this country, women are not used to being technicians. However, as the world now seems to be having a tendency of gender-balanced jobs, women in this country are beginning to be brave enough to come along the mainstream of hands-on jobs. In the beginning, they were very few. Now, we have 21 female electricians, and we expect hundreds in the near future.
Hussein hopes when she becomes an electrician, more women will be inspired to enter the profession and build a better life for themselves too. But she acknowledges she faces stigma in a society where women's roles are largely limited to domestic life.
People have never witnessed a female working in this sphere, so I often become the center of attention, especially when I am working with my male colleagues in fixing or installing electricity. I feel embraced because they come together to watch us. Some think of me positively, while a majority of them discourage me.
Men still dominate the workplace and hold power and influence over major decisions, a reality women face on the job. But Hussein says this does not discourage her from focusing on her work and her pursuit of a better life. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
The Museum of Black Civilizations opened to the public this week in Dakar, Senegal. It is intended to be a place in Africa where artists and artifacts all over the country can be seen by an international crowd. Senegal's Minister of Culture, Abdul Latif Koulibaly, spoke with Ricky Stryak about the monumental opening.
It's a fantastic occasion for African people and the black people to open this kind of museum, because it's very important in our history and in our will to say what we are, where we come from, like in black people. What was the civilization on African people and black people here in Africa? For a long time in life, people consider that we have no civilization in Africa. It's not true. We make history. We was inside of history. This museum is for at a moment. It's very important to show what we are, how we deal with the history and civilization in the world. Proud to be here, proud to be the Minister of Culture of Senegal, to open this kind of museum in Senegal.
What do you hope comes in the future from this museum?
Good things will come for in this museum. We're waiting for African people. We are waiting for the diaspora. We are waiting for all the world. We never need now to be in Paris or Washington to set what is the production of African people. What is the cradle of history, the cradle of humanity? We have to show something to the people of the rest of the world. And what happened? We are waiting for a lot of people, tourists, culture actors, and all kinds of people coming to see what we are doing here in this museum.
Do you think it will help with the conversation around restitution of art from Europe and coming back? Do you think this is a place where that art could be put?
It's a question which is really important. But here, the African Museum civilization, black civilization, it's a question just we have to deal it. Well, what is not a very important question in terms of occupying our museum, or we don't wait these arts, to equip our museum. If we get it, it's okay. We are so proud because it's for us. It was stolen, being in Europe and America, everywhere in the world. It's for us. We are asking it. But what I want to say, we are not waiting for working. We have to work hardly to build a museum which has the respect of the world. See what is our aim, our objective. If we get our object from France, from Germany, from London, it's okay for us. If they don't come because they decide to keep it there at their home, it's okay for us. No matter.
That was Abdul Latif Koulibaly, Senegal's Minister of Culture. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. And that is it for this Thursday, January 30 edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Anger over rising prices, shortages of bread and fuel, and a cash crisis has incited demonstrations across Sudan and against President Omar al-Bashir. Is Sudan in the precipice of change? An in-depth discussion on the politics of Sudan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thank you.